Good morning and welcome to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm your host, Kathleen Sabo. New Mexico's 2015 state legislative session ends Saturday at noon. Between now and then, and at times in a near frenzy of activity, there is the opportunity for additional legislation to be passed and sent to the governor. Today, we'll take a look at what has happened during this session and what may happen still, which proposed legislation continues to move through committees and chambers and onward toward the governor's desk, how has this year's legislative session served New Mexico, and how has it served you? Joining me in the studio for today's exploration are former New Mexico State Senator and author Dee Dee Feldman and journalist Gwyneth Doland, who is covering the state legislature for a partnership between New Mexico PBS, KUNM News, and New Mexico In Depth. Joining us by phone from the state capitol in Santa Fe is Mylon Simonich of the Santa Fe New Mexican. Welcome to all of you. Thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks.
In these dwindling days of the session, to participate in our program, email us at collinshow@kunm.org or post your questions and comments online at kunm.org. Dee Dee Feldman, you are author of the book Inside the New Mexico Senate, Boots, Suits, and Citizens. This is a subject you know well, as you are a former New Mexico State Senator. For how long did you serve in the Senate?
16 years.
16 years.
Hard time.
And when did you leave?
2012.
So you know this well. Give us a sense, please, of what it is like at the Capitol for a lawmaker, a senator or a representative during the last days of a session.
Well, to say that it's hectic is really an understatement, I would say. Grueling might be a better description. It's a very tense time. I remember really during the last week sort of standing at my desk, gripping the sides, hoping that something wouldn't be, you know, a toxic waste dump wouldn't be placed in my district while I wasn't looking. Things can happen quickly, out of the blue. It used to be that conference committees, which were used a great deal at the end of the session, you could slip something into the appropriations bill without anyone even noticing. But it's really everybody is deprived of sleep. I used to sleep in my office the last night of the session because usually it was over around 2, 3 maybe, 4, and then it would convene again around 8:30 in the morning. So, you know, by the time you got home, you were only getting an hour's sleep. So, you know, I think that's the kind of stress and exhaustion. People are running on fumes, just on fumes. And it's not really surprising that in that atmosphere, you know, misunderstandings, small slights become blown up into, you know, into something more than they really were.
Well, tell us why this happens, because as citizens looking from the outside might say, okay, 60 days. Everybody knows it's 60 days. Why is so much happening at the end of the session? Why this pressure? Why lawmakers having to look for the toxic waste dump that might be slipped in, as you said? Why does that happen?
Well, we have constitutionally very short sessions in comparison to other states. And 60 days, 30 days in an even-numbered year, it's a short period of time when you have a $6.2 billion budget, a 24-hour news cycle, and a complex economy, sometimes with disasters thrown in, forest fires and so on. But, you know, when it was set up in 2012, New Mexico government was really for the convenience of farmers and ranchers. And, you know, January, February, kind of the off season for them. And they didn't want the legislature to meet too often or too long because they thought, you know, as long as the legislators were in town, they could do a lot of damage, like raise taxes, pass laws, increase regulations that would be burdensome to farmers, ranchers, and businesses.
Well, in addition, we had the time change in the middle of that, and we'll get to that legislation a bit later on. But Gwyneth Dolan, you joined us in the studio, I think it was January 22nd, just after the start of the legislative session, where we spoke of how, for the first time in more than 50 years, Republicans were in control of the state House of Representatives, and we wondered how that would impact this session. Has this shift been a theme of the session this year?
Yeah, it's been huge, obviously. I think it's part of the tension. There's always tension between the House and the Senate and between the parties. But, you know, I was reporting for New Mexico PBS yesterday and passing people in the hall, and just no one wanted to talk because everyone is really, as Dee Dee described exactly, cranky, exhausted. One employee, not a lawmaker, but an employee, whispered to me, "I'm going to go sleep in my truck." And then a lawmaker passed and said, "I'm going to go sleep in my office." People are exhausted and they're frustrated that not enough is happening, that their bills have been thwarted, that they aren't able to push stuff through. I saw, some of the leadership from both houses kind of talking in the hallways, and, you know, you're never sure if it's going to be a great thing that comes out of that conversation, or maybe blows. You know, I sort of thought yesterday that someone might get hit.
Well, now tell me, are committees still meeting at this point?
They are. I got the list this morning, or I looked at Twitter at 5:30 this morning of what was going on. Some committees have sort of stopped meeting, but some still are. There's just nowhere near enough time. And, you know, people criticize them for not getting anything done. But the process does take time. If they don't send things to committees, people complain, "Oh, you didn't give this a hearing." And then if they want to give everything a hearing, there isn't time for, 3,000 bills to be heard. So it's a bunch of compromises and tension.
Well, and just to reset for people listening, a bill is proposed out of a certain chamber. It goes through committees in that chamber. It then goes to the floor of that chamber. It then moves over to the other chamber where it will be assigned committees before it gets to the floor there. So there is a lot that happens during this session.
And it's really hard to streamline that process as much as you think, well, what can't we just skip some of these committees? Other people are fighting against you on that.
Well, we're talking today about the 2015 New Mexico State Legislative Session. I'm joined by Mylon Simonich, who we'll hear from in a minute, from the Santa Fe New Mexican, also by journalist Gwyneth Dolan and former New Mexico State Senator Dee Dee Feldman. You can post comments and questions for our panel on Facebook. Search for KUNM Radio or on Twitter at KUNM News. Well, Mylon, you're joining us from telephone in the state capitol, the roundhouse. Is it quiet at this point?
Actually, I'm in the New Mexican office,
but
there are committees already started at the Capitol this morning on at least one high-profile bill, a compromise in the Senate on the driver's licenses for people without proof of immigration status. That hearing probably started about now.
And that is in which committee?
Senate Judiciary.
And is that the final committee for that compromise bill? Are you
I
aware?
Think so, it had an assignment to finance, but the sponsor, John Arthur Smith, the senator who is actually the chairman of the Finance Committee, asked if that final assignment could be removed. So if it gets out of there, it might go to the floor. It might never get called.
Okay, now you've been covering the session for the Santa Fe New Mexican this entire time. What legislation have you been following, and what are you still following?
Well, the budget is the one that's hanging out there as the big item. Essentially, it's in play, $6.23 billion, 1.3% increase. There was a hang-up yesterday, some fighting as two committee chairmen in the House, Republican committee chairmen, sent a letter to the Senate saying they weren't going to sign off on the budget until another bill was approved. That seemed to have blown over by the end of the day. So the budget is there. In terms of the big initiatives by the governor, most of those are dead. Driver's licenses, she wanted a repeal of the 2003 law that allows people without proof of immigration status to have a driver's license. That's not going to pass. Her bill for holding back third graders in masks got stopped last night in a Senate committee. So that's not going to pass. And what they called incorrectly or euphemistically right-to-work laws, compulsory union fees, those aren't going to pass.
Well, now, when you've been following these, are you getting the sense that they're not passing, that they're stuck because they're bad law or because of politics?
Well, it depends who you ask that question. If you ask the Republicans, they'll say it's politics, that these are good laws. The Democrats say they're bad laws, that they wouldn't create jobs, they wouldn't help the economy, they wouldn't help families, and so you're into you wouldn't help schools. Last night, the classic debate was, if you hold back students, third graders in this case, without involving the parents, is that a smart decision? And you're going to hold back hundreds or maybe thousands in a year. Is that going to help those kids, or are they going to end up doing worse in school? The research indicates that they would do worse. So the bill got held up. But when you have a simplistic theme going on, we can't pass along kids who can't read. In this state, there are a lot of kids who are learning English as a second language. This is a majority-minority state. So you have lots of kids trying to master English as a second language. And when you're a little kid doing that, maybe your reading score isn't as high as expectations would be, but that doesn't mean that holding that kid back is the solution. So that's the debate that goes on, and it's very nuanced, but of course in the soundbite world of social media, it is less nuanced.
Well, and I saw a quotation from Senator Mimi Stewart. This was actually in an article that you wrote on the New Mexican website. I saw this, and her quote was, "I can't support a bill that's going to harm children," said Senator Mimi Stewart, a retired teacher. "There's nothing magical about repeating a grade. The magic comes when you get intervention," close quote, "such as summer school and extra help during the regular academic career." So that I think that's where the difference comes. People who want who are pushing for intervention above all else. Is that sort of the gist of that?
It is, and you have to remember that the governor campaigned on this issue twice, starting in 2010, saying what she calls social promotion is destructive. We're just passing along kids. And having been in schools this year, covering this as the bills progressed, teachers take this quite seriously. They don't just say, I'm going to pass along every kid. They're making individual judgments. Is this kid going to improve over the summer? If we hold him back, he's bigger than the other kids, is he going to become a target of ridicule? There's a lot of nuance into the decision-making. And what the Democrats didn't like about that bill is that it removes parents from the decision. Mm. Ultimately, if you're going to decide on a standardized test score, that's what you're going to get. Here's where the scores fall. There's no thinking then of other ramifications. And there was one teacher union leader who said at one point, she's not against retention as a concept. It may have its place in certain circumstances. But she told of having twins, and one doing well, one not so well. And under this system, one would have been held back. And you can see how unworkable that might be if you just follow test scores.
We're discussing the 2015 legislative session. I'm joined today by Gwyneth Doland, who is covering the state legislature for a partnership between New Mexico PBS, KUNM News, and New Mexico In Depth. Also by Mylon Simonich of the Santa Fe New Mexican, and former New Mexico State Senator and author Dee Dee Feldman. Join the conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM. Or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. Tell us, are you following the legislative session? What's of import to you? We'll be back with you after this short break.
Edible Arrangements at 4770 Montgomery Boulevard Northeast in Albuquerque offers fresh fruit bouquets and chocolate-dipped fruit for any occasion. EdibleArrangements.com or 505-888-0100. Edible Arrangements is a valued supporter of KUNM.
Support for KUNM comes from Absolutely Neon, a full-range source for neon lighting design, restoration, and fabrication for home or business. The complete Absolutely Neon portfolio can be viewed at AbsolutelyNeon.com.
Explore a world full of animals and plants at the ABQ Biopark during spring break. Camp Biopark is for children 9 to 11 years old and offers hands-on learning, games, stories, and more. Girl Scouts can earn badges by participating. Online registration available now at abqbiopark.com, or for more information in Albuquerque, call 311. A message from the tax-exempt ABQ Biopark.
Welcome back to the KUNM Collins Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and we're talking today about the 2015 legislative session, which ends this Saturday at noon. And former State Senator Dede Feldman, you had a point you wanted to make about the end of the session before we move to callers.
Yeah, I think the two words that are really come to my mind at the end of the session, and maybe Gwyneth and Milan can say that, is leverage and reciprocity. Usually, they're two sides of the same coin, because it requires reciprocity for the session to end successfully. The House has to hear the Senate's bills. The Senate has to hear the House bills. Republican bills take turn with Democratic bills. It takes some cooperation there. Leverage, on the other hand, can be used when you say, you know, as was said yesterday, we won't pass the budget unless you pass the tax bill. And so, often that is done with the budget in particular. They save the budget because the budget is the ultimate leverage thing. Once the budget passes, there's not too much leverage left, or the capital outlay bill passes, there's not too much big leverage left. And given the shortage of time, both floor sessions are subject to filibusters and time wasters.
Well, there's been a cozier relationship in for the past 50 years between the House and the Senate, no doubt, but always tension between the Republicans and the Democrats. What are we seeing, Gwyneth, about that tension? Is there a resolution that might happen?
No. No, I don't see a resolution at all. I mean, tension is part of the package always. You know, every single year, new reporters come up and they say to me, oh, did you see that the House is complaining that they aren't doing Senate bills? And I'm like, yeah, what else is new? Like, some of this stuff just happens all the time anyway. But I think there is more frustration and more hostility because this power dynamic is new, and because there are a lot of new people up there. And so the same old frustrations just have a little extra fuel on the fire.
Well, is there still a leverage situation with the budget and the tax bill? Did that get resolved yesterday?
Well, I was amused by the picture on the front page of the Journal this morning, in which the House chairman of the Ways and Means Committee was speaking to the Senate chairman of the Finance Committee, and he was on his knees in front of John Arthur. Perhaps you couldn't tell that unless you had been there, but this is often the case where supplicants are on their knees, literally, because they have to bend down to talk to somebody on the floor. And so there he was, you know, supplicating the head of the Senate Finance Committee. And I'm sure the same is true of senators going over to the Speaker of the House asking to have their bills heard.
Well, let's go ahead and bring in our first caller of the morning. It's Sterling from Santa Fe. Good morning, Sterling.
Good morning.
Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. I have a question for Senator Feldman. Hi, Dede.
Hi,
I just wondered if you think there is a practical way to limit the number of bills that are introduced in each session of the legislature to make the process a little bit more efficient and give sufficient time for considering considering those bills that would be introduced.
I've always thought that would be a good idea, Sterling, and there have been a number of bills that have been introduced to do that, and they've never passed. And the response is always, but you don't understand. You're from Albuquerque, where you just have one school district. You just have one county commission. You just have one city council. The folks from the rural areas might have seven different consolidated school districts and three different municipalities, four different counties, each wanting their own piece of legislation. So the rural legislators, I found, are far less likely to go along with something like that, although to me it makes eminent sense.
Well, and Sterling, if you're still there, I know the answer to this, but what do you think that would accomplish if we limit the number of bills that can be introduced?
Well, I think if each party got a certain number of bills, then there would be a lot more consideration given to What I perceive, anyway, having worked in the legislature for about 40 years, is the tendency on the part of some legislators to introduce a bill to fix a problem, when in fact the problem is not really necessarily subject to fixing by the legislature, but could have been addressed in some other way administratively between the legislative sessions. That's my main thought about limiting the number of bills.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling this morning, Sterling, and joining our conversation. I want to go to an email question from Scott. Has there ever been an attempt, he asked, to change the session timeline, length of sessions, location to Albuquerque?
Yes. It was almost a perennial bill for a decade or so to extend the length of the short session to 45 days rather than 30 days. It requires a constitutional amendment, you see, which makes it more difficult because you need an extraordinary majority in the legislature, and then it needs to pass at the ballot box. And it has never made much progress.
All right. Well, before we get to our next caller, Gwyneth, I want to ask you, what do you still have your eyes on? What are you following still?
I've sort of been on the accountability, ethics, and transparency beat this session and looking a lot at the connection between money and politics. I was watching there's been a push to get more information out of lobbyists. Dee Dee and I have been talking about this for a long time. Representative Jeff Steinborn had a pretty robust bill that would have required in the beginning lobbyists to tell us, we've talked about this on the air here, who they're working for, how much money they make, which bills they're working on, all this stuff. It made it through the House unanimously and then got pretty much entirely gutted in the Senate Rules Committee tomorrow. So yesterday, I mean.
You're suffering as
I am
well,
also
yes.
Suffering. So that is not going to have any significant impact on what we know about lobbyists right now.
All right. I'm going to ask. All right. Here, I'm going to serve up this softball question. Why? Why did that happen? Why did things get stripped out?
Well, yeah. I mean, I know everybody's thinking, well, the lobbyists made it happen. And yeah, but, you know, remember that I spent a session as a lobbyist for the Foundation for Open Government. Mm. And there are a lot of lobbyists up there. I interviewed Meredith Machen from the League of Women Voters yesterday. There's a lot of folks up there who don't wear horns and breathe fire who qualify as lobbyists. So I don't want to demonize them that way. But there are, you know, a lot of very powerful, very well-paid, very well-connected people who would not want people to know how much they make or who they work for or what bills they're working on or how much money they're spending when they take lawmakers out to dinner. There's no doubt. Those people are there. They have a lot of power, and they don't want this to happen.
Mm. Well, we have an email question, and we seem to have a theme going here. This is from Chris. She says, the legislative calendar is too short. Nothing gets done, especially in a 30-day session. Also, unpaid lawmakers is a problem. What about 3 days a week for 20 weeks would open doors for lawmakers and for the public to participate? And I want to bring in Sarah here from Albuquerque, who wants to ask a question about the legislature becoming a full-time job. So, Sarah, thanks for joining us this morning.
Yes, I just want to mention that, you know, our city councilor is getting paid $30,000 here in Albuquerque. We just passed that. And, you know, we need to make our state representative jobs a full-time job where they could, you know, support a family. And also, you know, as Ms. Feldman have mentioned, that we need to have, like, extended, like, three-month sessions three times a year. Because we have 10 months left out of the year, and why are we panicking, staying up 3 in the morning, losing sleep? I mean, this is nonsense. And I know that this is a state law, but, you know, this is a state law that was established, like, 1910 or 100 years ago, as Ms. Bellman have mentioned, that when this was a farming community, when there was nobody to govern, there was nothing much to govern. And so just because something worked 100 years ago, it's no longer applicable now. And for some reason, this state don't like to change
All right, Sarah, thanks so much for your call today. And Mylon, let's bring you in, because one of the things you've been writing about is the rancor during this session. And so here we have some proposals, full time, 6 months a year, 3 days a week for 20 weeks. Do you think that this would help solve this issue of people not getting along? I mean, tell us your thoughts about this.
No, nothing's going to help that. But I do think the caller makes a good point in that if you had a salary, and I don't know about full-time because I've lived in states where you have full-time legislatures and I'm not sure that they work very well, but if you paid a respectable salary, you would increase the talent pool. Right now, there are lots of retirees in the legislature, lots of former government employees, and plenty of current government employees. They can do this. They can get away from a school district for 60 days in the wintertime. A guy who's running an accounting firm cannot do that. He's in tax season, but he might have much to commend to the legislature. So I think the talent pool for legislators would be broadened with a salary, and you wouldn't just have retirees and people who have wealth. And other than lawyers, there aren't that many private business people in the legislature. So on that basis, having a longer session, I don't buy. I think you have to prioritize. That's where leadership comes in. What are the two or three big items that you want to get done? Senator Michael Padilla, the Democratic whip from Albuquerque, had the best quote I thought of the session. He said, everything we do should be about jobs, 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 or education, education, education. That's what we ought to worry about. That's how we turn around the state. That's how we put people to work. That's how we make sure kids succeed. And instead, we get all kinds of things. Everybody wants to pass a bill. You get elected. Well, you go back to your district. What did you do? Did you pass any bills? No, I didn't. So they introduce a lot of stuff. But I think prioritizing is a leadership function, and that has not happened very much this session.
We're discussing the 2015 legislative session. I'm joined by former New Mexico State Senator Dede Feldman, journalist Gwyneth Doland, and Mylon Simonich of the Santa Fe New Mexican. Join our conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. And just a quick email question from John. Perhaps someone knows, is there a bill to fund investment in transportation infrastructure? Is that so, Gwyneth? You're shaking your head.
The governor had made that a priority, but I haven't looked at it. We'll look it up and get back to him on that. How about that?
All right. Sounds good. Sounds good. Now, we do have we talked even before I saw a commenter who had written in before the show even began, and we do have multiple questions on the daylight savings bill. We have people who say it's not safe for kids to stand in the dark waiting for the bus, especially in areas where streets aren't lit. Another says it simply doesn't make sense. I know there are supporters out there as well. Gwyneth, tell us. What
I do a lot of work for people on the coasts, and I'm on conference calls with people on the coasts, and it's already like, oh, I'm sorry, you guys, but I'm on mountain time, and they just can't fathom that people out here are on a different. And if we were on some weird time like Arizona, like, well, I'm sort of mountain time, but not really. I'm in New Mexico, but I'm sort of like, no way, I can't handle it.
All right. Well, but is this moving? Dede Feldman, are you watching this? Is it moving? Is it going to pass? It passed the Senate, did it not?
I think it's much ado about nothing. I too got tremendous amount of input on this from constituents, from people all around the state, because it affects them personally. They're tired. They're not tired. But really, it's the Department of Transportation. It's the federal government. It's going to make the final decision on this. It's I don't think that the state can ever have the final say.
So, Mylon, we were talking before the show began, and one of you, either you, Dede, or Mylon, said someone characterized it as sort of a fancy memorial. What is the talk up there in the Capitol about this bill?
Well, that was actually the bill sponsor.
That was the bill sponsor. Okay.
Memorial, because even if it gets through both houses, it's signed by the governor, Senator Feldman is right, it would have to go to the U.S. Transportation Secretary, who would make the decision after a series of public hearings. And, of course, right now, a lot of this is half-baked because we don't know consequences for commerce, for airline schedules, for shipping schedules. And, of course, there's, everybody's talking about kids going to school in the dark. And some of the senators who voted for this said kids already go to school in the dark. So this is let's just stick with one time, not change the clock twice a year. But it has a long road if it gets through the House, and I'm not sure it will.
All right, let's bring Tom from Albuquerque into our conversation. Good morning, Tom. And you have a question for our panel?
Yes, my question is concerning the railroad Amtrak. What's going to happen with the potential funding for that for New Mexico's share of the rail bill, since the other three states have approved it? Governor Martinez keeps holding off on it at the risk that Amtrak is going to circumvent New Mexico, and to the tune of, I guess, somewhere about 150,000 passengers get on and off at New Mexico stations, a couple of which are being restored for the purpose of using Amtrak, being La Castañeda and Winslow.
All right, well, let's go ahead and let's get our panel to see if they know anything about this. Dee Dee Feldman, you're shaking your head no. Gwyneth, Mylan, any sense about the funding for the Southwest Chief train?
Southwest Chief, New Mexico hasn't been as aggressive as the other states on that. And, of course, there's always that trap you're worried about of a private corporation trying to get the best deal it can for itself. I personally haven't covered that issue. My colleague Patrick Malone has been doing that, and he's on paternity leave now. So I will have to the caller has inspired me to check on that this morning when I get to work, when I get to the Capitol.
All right. Now, Dee Dee Feldman, you're doing a little bit of work this year during the session for Common Cause, is it not? And so what are you following in that regard?
Well, I'm following a bunch of disclosure bills as well.
Disclosure lobbyist or?
Both. Both the bill that Gwyneth was talking about, House Bill 155, which would require more disclosure of lobbyist information, as well as a measure carried by Representative Jim Smith and Senator Peter Wirth that would require the disclosure of the donors to independent campaign fund, super PACs, so dark money, so to speak. And that is making its way through the House. It had three committee assignments, which I found rather unusual in my history there. It always meant that was the kiss of death for a bill when it has three committee assignments, although it is moving. And there seems to be a lot of talk and more bipartisan agreement this year on transparency and disclosure and trying to incrementally increase the amount of information available to the public through the Sunshine Portals about contracts now, state contracts. That's another bill. Yet this bill has not moved very fast.
What are the chances that it will move?
Miracles can happen. I mean, miracles can happen. As we were talking about, things can move very quickly in the last 2 days if there is a will, and committee assignments can be withdrawn. And
what that means, it would proceed to the floor directly rather than going through a particular committee?
Yes, in either house. But if there is a difference, we must remember, if there's a difference between a bill that passes the Senate and passes the House, it has to either be concurred upon by the other House or it goes to a conference committee, another time sink.
And changes can be made by that conference committee. Is that
yes,
accurate?
And then it has to go back to both the houses. And those kind of conference committees usually meet on the last night or the last day of the session, and it's very iffy whether they will pass in time.
Now, New Mexico does lag behind in terms of reporting donors and contributors. Does it not?
Yes, we're always, and I think Gwyneth has researched that, we're always last. We get an F when it comes to disclosure.
And Gwyneth, talk to me a bit about that then. Yeah, I'm actually working on a report right now for the Center for Public Integrity in Washington. It's called the State Integrity Investigation. It's a 50-state report card on things like campaign finance disclosure. And our system is just not particularly strong in terms of the kinds of information folks have to give up. Other states have much stricter rules about disclosing where this money comes from. And obviously, this is seen as a measure against the risk of corruption. Mm-hmm. And so people take it very seriously. These don't often go anywhere. And partially it's because there are those who say, but, you know, this is how we express our freedom of speech, right, with this money. And you know, I don't have to tell you who I am when I stand up on a street corner and hold a sign. So I don't need to tell you who I am when I give this money. And there are other folks for whom I think it's just inconvenient.
Well, we're talking today about the 2015 legislative session. I'm joined by Mylon Simonich of the Santa Fe New Mexican, by journalist Gwyneth Doland, who is covering the state legislature for a partnership between New Mexico PBS, KUNM News, and New Mexico In Depth, and former New Mexico State Senator and author Dee Dee Feldman. You can join our conversation at 277-5866. That's 277-KUNM, or our toll-free number, 1-877-899-5866. We'll be back with your questions and comments, your phone calls, right after this short break.
Need a new home for that gently used couch? Upgrading a bathroom? Restore has it all, from building supplies to home furnishings. Restore purchases and donations have built 175 homes for low-income families in Albuquerque. Shop Habitat for Humanity Restore, 4900 Manal, west of San Mateo, Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5. For large donation pickup, call 265-0057. A message from the tax-exempt Greater Albuquerque Habitat for Humanity.
Do you appreciate folk art from around the world? Then watch your mail for several chances to win beautiful textiles donated by the Santa Fe International Folk Art Market. If you've never donated to KUNM before, you won't receive a mailing, but you can still donate and register for 13 chances to win at KUNM.org. Click Support KUNM at the top of the homepage, return your mailing, or go online today, because the first three winners will be drawn before the Spring Pledge Drive.
Welcome back to the KUNM Call-In Show. I'm Kathleen Sabo, and today we're talking about the 2015 legislative session, which ends this Saturday at noon. Let's go ahead and bring in caller Wayne from Albuquerque to our discussion. Good morning, Wayne.
Oh, good morning, ladies. Thanks for taking my call. I just was hoping to say a mouthful about what's going on with the legislature here in New Mexico and how it affects public education, particularly APS.
Please go right ahead.
Well, number one, I'd like to give the legislature and the governor and Hannah Scandera very low marks for all the damage they've caused to the situation. Number one rule about teaching is that kids can't learn in chaos. And I think in the 15 years that I've been a teacher, plus my ongoing work with the public schools, I've just found that the situation has gotten more and more chaotic. There's just not anything being done positively regarding high numbers, getting materials that are helpful for teachers to use, having good school-wide behavior management policies and procedures. You know, it gets further and further away from teachers and administrators running the schools and closer to lawmakers and parents steering the ship. And it's just really frustrating. You know, I know a lot of this is fallout from national laws like the public law 94-142 and FAPE, but, you know, definitely in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, and even into the 80s, you know, you saw the public school system doing a great job of teaching to the middle. And it seems like, you know, the middle kids are the ones that are being ignored and forgotten the most. The legislature seems to forget that as we go closer and closer to a business model for the schools, grading teachers, grading schools. You know, and what's going on right now in the legislature is still more damage being done, more potentially chaotic stuff being thrown at teachers, and the whole thing is just frustrating.
Well, Wayne, what would you like to see happen before the session ends or to have happened?
Well, we started out by confirming Hannah Scandera, somebody who just doesn't seem to share the same vision for what public schools should be doing as teachers and administrators. She seems actually to be opposed to the positions that are done. So that first step, you know, just makes for more tension in the overall situation. I think what we would like to see generally, and when I say we, I mean people who, you know, are still teachers who want to be in the situation, is we want to make a difference. We want to definitely see numbers go down. We would like to see, you know, buying textbooks again for science and social studies instead of having weird programs like, you know, that the students don't even access.
All right. Well, Wayne, thank you. Thank you for your call today. We get it. And we're going to go to Mary because she wants to also talk about education. And then we'll get some comments from our panel here. Good morning, Mary. Thanks for your call.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I'm calling because I just wanted to point out that 5 years ago, a cohort of New Mexican children were born. Now in the fall, they'll start school. They'll start school, some of them quite ready for school and others with serious deficits. By the time those kids were three, most of their brain development had already been achieved, and significant differences could have been noted and were noted if they were in preschool in their language development. Now at five, those differences are even more pronounced, and they predict very, very strongly to reading deficits by third grade. So from this point on, if those children didn't have access to a quality early care and education program, the schools are going to be playing catch-up.
All right, so
referring them for evaluation.
So in the interest of getting as many people on as possible, what would you like to have seen? What would you still like to see from this year's legislative session?
I'd like to see as much funding as absolutely possible to give full access or fuller access to every child whose parents want early care and education so that everybody has a fair chance at school success.
All right, Mary, thanks so much for your call today. And let's get some comment from our panelists. Mylan, the education bills, the education situation, what are your comments on what happened this year and what is happening?
Well, the caller was referring to early childhood education. There is a state constitutional amendment sponsored by Senator Michael Padilla again this year. It has no chance because since I've been there, which is 5 years, no Republican on the floor has voted for the bill to use the land-grant endowment to help fund early childhood education. That's $14.4 billion, one of the largest endowments in the country. So that's been seen as the natural spot to try to increase early childhood education to do the sorts of programs she was talking about. It's not going to pass. The Catholic Church, the Catholic bishops in the state are behind that initiative, and they have taken a position that if Governor Susana Martinez wanted a legacy, that's the legacy. Go ahead and get behind that program to tap the land-grant endowment and fund early childhood education, and then you would have a much better educated workforce, a much better educated New Mexico. The governor has opposed that. She doesn't want to raid that fund. She uses the term raid. The people who support the bill say the fund would continue to grow even if you took some money out for early childhood education. So that seems to be the big issue. But this year it really didn't have any legs because the Republicans have the House now for the first time since 1954, and they're not supporting it.
Well, wasn't there also some fear seeing oil and gas prices diminish, and that is the source of this funding? Dee Dee Feldman, you want to talk about education briefly?
Well, you know, I think Mary's point, and I want to thank her and Wayne for calling in and keeping our eye on the ball here. Mary's point is that, you know, this is not a new issue. The legislature has been discussing early childhood education now for 4 or 5 years. I think this may be the fifth year that the constitutional amendment was proposed. But in that interim, we now have 4 and 5 year olds who could have benefited from an investment in early childhood, who will not be benefiting and will ultimately cost the system more money.
Let's go ahead and read an email comment from Carl. Seems like many bills are introduced to get attention rather than to get passed. He cites the motorcycle helmet bill, the 20-week abortion ban. Do lawmakers consider whether their legislation has any legs across the aisle before introducing?
Yeah, I would say, of course they do. But, you know, there's a lot of strategy that goes into that. You know, the governor, this governor, previous governors often introduce things, want things introduced that they know are going to go nowhere, but they want to use it as an opportunity to talk about their priorities and get their message out there and make it a debate and further the conversation on it. I have no doubt that the people who proposed the abortion ban and the motorcycle helmet law are very sincere and very serious about that and want to happen. It'll never happen. Nothing will ever happen if you don't bring it up. And often it takes even really reasonable ideas with lots of bipartisan support years to get past.
You lay a foundation. The agencies start to weigh in. Things actually start getting discussed. Mylon, you wanted to add something?
Yeah. There are message bills where people, for instance, this year, the Senate Majority Leader, Michael Sanchez, introduced a bill to grade cabinet secretaries and state departments, and that was a jab at the Martinez administration for grading schools and spending a lot of time on tests, grading teachers. But the motorcycle helmet law was very sincere. Senator Gerald Ortiz-Pino of Albuquerque believes that people who get catastrophic injuries because they don't have a helmet on cost the rest of us a lot of money. So, and there's certainly debate about whether helmets make people safer or not, but that was a sincere bill. And the impetus for the anti-abortion bills was the three Catholic bishops in the state. There were no anti-abortion bills introduced until February. The bishops publicly called for them in early January. That's where that one started.
All right. Let's take a quick email question from Millicent regarding lobbyist disclosure. What are the industries that employ lobbyists who oppose lobbyist disclosure bills? Gwyneth?
That's a great point. I would have been writing their names down in committee this whole time. But the weird thing is they mostly don't stand up and say who they are and who they work for and why they oppose it.
There's a lot of visiting of senators and representatives in offices.
You know what? It doesn't even have to be that. They can just walk in the room. And everybody knows who they are because they're former lawmakers. They are
relatives.
They're very, you know, they know who they are. They know what they're up to. They've visited previously. And, you know, we know this as reporters. I walk in the room and eyeballs touch on me and I can see all these calculations changing like, oh, crap, you know. And so, you know, that they're thinking the same thing when the lobbyists walk in. Oh, crap.
Well, let's go ahead and take what may be a quick call from George. George, thanks for joining us. Thanks for holding. And you have a question, please.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. My question is about the legislation that would require people running for the office of county sheriff to have some number of years of law enforcement experience. I'm just interested in any of the panelists' comments on what is the motivation for that bill and is it getting any traction in this session? And I'll hang up and listen.
All right, George, thanks so much for calling. Gwyneth?
I'll say I know nothing about it whatsoever. But for those of you who are listening, you can go and look up these bills yourself on the legislature's website. It's www.nmlegis.gov. You can click on legislation and do a keyword search. If you know the bill number, you can search by that, and then it'll tell you where it is, how it's been changed, where it goes next. It's super useful.
You can search by sponsor as well. So let's talk a little bit, because I see a question looming here. Let's talk a little bit just briefly about Senator Phil Griego and his resignation and what's happened subsequent. Dee Dee Feldman, how unusual is that circumstance for that to happen toward the end of a session?
Well, a legislator has not been expelled or censured since 1992, when Representative Ron O'Gein was censured on the floor of the House. He was not expelled, and which takes an extraordinary majority, by the way. And yet, the next year, he was convicted and went to prison for bribery. So the legislature is very, very reluctant to criticize one of their own. There's kind of a code of silence, and I think that we saw that code of silence even surrounding this process, which did have the intended outcome, I believe, of a resignation rather than a disruptive floor session. But the question is whether we really need an independent ethics commission.
Well, and I know, Gwyneth, you wanted to get to that as well. So what's happening with that?
Nothing. It's going nowhere. It's not going to happen. I was reporting on it yesterday. It's going to be the subject of my package tomorrow night on New Mexico in Focus on New Mexico PBS. I talked to some lawmakers about it yesterday, and you know, you have to remember that this legislature is an insular body, and when you attack one part of it, they will rally around each other. That's why you have not seen Republicans from the legislature using this as ammunition so much. They are, you know, they've closed ranks. One lawmaker told me yesterday in the meeting that they had about this, the last meeting, he said he'd never seen so much crying.
Well, and so we ended up with a resignation rather than any kind of a formal motion on the floor. Well, we're getting close to the close of our show. And so, Mylon, I want to get to you and just ask you, you know, what are you following that you think listeners ought to keep their eye on here? What would you suggest?
Well, there's one bill that for years and years has gone nowhere, but this year is going somewhere, and that is a bill for hemp, industrial hemp, in this case just research. But hemp as an agricultural product has a lot of interest, and it's gotten through all its committees so far. So that one may actually have benefits for the economy. And there, the federal government is making some changes in that regard, too, where hemp is not considered the destructive drug of the past. So that one may have more practical effect for the economy than most other bills that they're doing.
All right, and Dee Dee Feldman, one thing we didn't mention was voter ID. Is that still moving, the requirement that people need to show identification when they get to the polls? I think that's still moving. That might be going
I think to- Catherine Brown's bill passed the House. Whether it will pass the Senate Rules Committee is certainly another question. Those kinds of bills have failed in the past in that committee.
Well, what would you tell listeners to keep their eye on in these next couple of days?
Well, I think just tuning into the webcast will be a fascinating thing because you never know what can happen on the floor of the Senate or the House in that final day. 2 years ago, we had that surprise tax package that came up seemingly out of nowhere and passed with very big consequences for the state of New Mexico. I think they're still undoing some of the damage from that.
And again, people can access that at that same website that Gwyneth, you referred to, nmlegis.gov. Lots of resources there. And in closing, Gwyneth, what do you want to say?
Yeah, I think it's really, really hard if you're not there to track individual issues or bills through these last few days because the website isn't updated quite quickly enough. The best way to find out what's happening right now and to scroll through what's happened recently is to go to Twitter and to type in the hashtag NMLEG. And if you can just look through the past few hours of what's happened, you can see what's passed, what's in committee, what's going on. That's the best way.
That's a great suggestion. I know working with various committees up there, sometimes we would grab people and meet in the Senate lounge. So you're right. That's the best way to keep track of it. Well, we want to thank our guests, the Santa Fe, New Mexicans, Mylon Simonich, author and former New Mexico State Senator Dee Dee Feldman, and journalist Gwyneth Doland, who is covering the state legislature for a partnership between New Mexico PBS, KUNM News, and New Mexico In Depth. You can find a podcast of this and other KUNM call-in shows online at KUNM.org. Roman Garcia has engineered our show today. Kaveh Movahed handled our phones. Elaine Baumgartel is our executive producer. I'm Kathleen Sabo. This is the KUNM call-in show on 89.9 KUNM, broadcasting live from the University of New Mexico.